Rivera, and welcome to episode 2 of the High Tech Gear Weekly. This is everything Microsoft. I am Christopher Sparrow, your hostess with our host with the most. I am the editor-in-chief over at itechgear.org, and I'm joined this evening by Mr. Larry McJunkin, former co-owner of WugNet Publications, a Windows Users Group Network. How you doing, Larry?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Doing very, very well. Doing very, very well. It's a great, great, great night. Sunday, October. Gosh, October already. October 3rd, 2021. Joining Larry and I this evening is Mr. Joel McLaughlin.
Good evening.
Contributing writer over at Gear Diary. And current with the Linux Link Tech Show. How you doing there, Joel?
I'm doing well. Got water because I didn't have it yesterday. And everything else is doing fine.
This is a good thing. That giggle there in the background has got to be Mr. Chris Cavullo, former contributing editor from Gear Diary and PocketNow.com. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. I've got root beer, so what do I know?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to go ahead and have us kick off. You know, there's been a lot going on this week. Last week, everything Apple. This time, everything Microsoft. Windows 11 releases on Tuesday, October 5th. It's a frightening thing.
Yeah.
For some people, it will be. For geeks like us. You know, we can probably handle it, but hey.
true. So I will tell you that I have been running a number of different dev channel releases of Windows 11 on a Surface Book 3. Right now I've got build, I think it's 22.468, I think.
That's the current one, yeah.
Right, the current one. 468 out there, and it seems to be fairly stable, seems to be okay, but I know that there's a big concern out there right now, because more than 55% of all workstations in the enterprise will not be Windows 11 compatible. So I know that ZDNet is reporting that like I said, more than half of all those workstations will not meet the new system requirements.
We touched on this last week, but is it that they won't work, or is it that Microsoft simply won't support them?
I think it is that they are just unsupported configurations.
Yeah.
Got it.
You know, at this point with Microsoft being so very particular with their security requirements, especially a TPM2 chip or TPM2 compatibility in BIOS, and having that turned on and active. There are a lot of machines that are out there that are, you know, still very, very powerful, i7s or i9s, or even i5s that are just not going to go ahead and make the cut.
Well, and ironically enough, if you looked at the pure hardware aspect of like laptops, like my Surface Go 6 or Surface Pro 6, I don't have a Go, but the Pro 6, technically probably doesn't support it, but it is fully supported according to Microsoft's little thingy.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, you know, one other thing, a friend of mine has tried to run his i7, and I'm not sure exactly the machine parameters what all was on it, but he said it failed on paper in at least two places, and it worked fine. I mean, absolutely works beautifully.
Oh, sure.
So
sure.
I don't know. There's a little dichotomy in what Microsoft is saying is workable and what actually will be working.
And let me add, I've got another Surface Pro 6 like Joel does. I've got another Surface Pro X running the ARM flavor of it, and I'm running it in a Windows parallel session, at least as long as Microsoft allows me to. And all three are working fine, such as it is on the current release.
There you go.
Yeah, and so am I. I've also running that Parallels installation on a M1 Mac, and it's working for now. It's okay. Yep. For now. It seems to be functioning well, but for how long? You know, I don't think that Microsoft is being what I would consider existing hardware kind. I know that they are really pushing for folks to buy a new PC to go along with the new version of Windows. So,
and contrast that with, I also have a 2017 MacBook. That's the one that runs on the, well, I would call it the Intel M series chips. They changed the name, but they're really the same. Mm-hmm. It's supporting the current Monterey beta.
Well, and this is what was originally called the Manager Book, right? This is the
correct.
Gold.
So this is a low end Apple from 4+ years ago,
right?
Well within the era that a lot of the Microsoft devices are getting cut out of the mix. This is still supported, but understand the Microsoft thing. I don't think is a performance thing as much as it's a security thing, as you pointed out. So
I truly do believe that this is really Microsoft pushing to tighten down security, which from an O'Leary, you can go ahead and harumph on this one for sure.
Yep.
Windows has always had a huge, huge security issues and problems. I know Steve Gibson from Security Now is constantly harping on something related to security. And malware and viruses plenty on the Windows side. I know it's something that we at Wugnet went ahead and tried to go ahead and screen for as far as all of our shareware picks of the week. We had to make certain that they were certifiably malware free.
Yeah, we lost our job if one failed.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Hey, you know, Chris, one other thing that, you know, hardware notwithstanding, I realize there's a lot of interest in this aspect, but, you know, from a totally different perspective, being retired, you know, one of the things that I do to kind of keep active, I preside over our local computer club, and we have 1,500 members. About 3/4 of them are Windows, and about the other quarter are Mac users. But anyway, 1,500 members, all very active folks, not geeks. Most of them, although they're over the age of 55, I get that, but there's still a range in that demographic, just the same as there would be in, say, a 30 to 50 year old crowd.
Right.
And we have been trying to prep our members for Windows 11 for a month, get them psyched up about it. And guess what?
They don't care.
The biggest problem I think Microsoft has is adoption. Windows 10 is already hard enough for a lot of people to deal with. Yeah. And I don't think the world's going to instantly just roll over and accept Windows 11, upgrade to it, and be done. I think
Microsoft's
got some marketing to do out there.
First. Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know, look at the sidestep slightly. Look at the Nintendo model. Nintendo wants to put out a new device. They immediately make sure that they have something compelling, like the latest Zelda game, something you've got to have to get you to drive adoption. What does Microsoft have in this particular case with Windows 11 to drive adoption?
From a software perspective or a hardware perspective?
What's the compelling thing? What's the I got to go there?
Again, from a hardware perspective or a software perspective? From a software perspective, Windows 11, in my opinion, is nothing more than Windows 10 5, Windows 10 Plus, whatever you want to call it. This is really nothing more than a evolutionary upgrade to Windows 10 with a new coat of paint.
Well, I was going to say, and the new coat of paint is probably the thing that would detract people from wanting to do that, because it's oh gosh.
Yeah, you got to redesign settings menu and stuff like that, improve Windows apps. But
I've certainly been reading a lot of complaints about some of the simplifications made to the start menu. It doesn't really bother me too much personally, because I don't rely on that particular feature of Windows 10. But I do know that it's bothering some folks. I've seen a lot of write-ups about how horrible it is. I don't think it's that horrible, but I don't think it's that exciting either. It's fine.
It just is.
it's fine.
You're right. You guys are right. It is what it is.
It almost seems like Windows 11 is a choice. It's not a process. It's not something I just have to go do. It's my choice whether I want to go do it or not.
Nope. And I would tend to agree. But, you know, at the Microsoft Surface event, which was held last week, Microsoft announced four major different pieces of hardware, right? They announced the Surface Pro 8, the Surface Go 3, which is basically just a refresh for them, the Surface Laptop Studio, which is a replacement for the Surface Book line, is what was going to be this Surface Book 4, right? And the Microsoft Surface Duo 2, their latest, greatest, and I think really only mobile device out there, right?
Yep.
The Surface Pro 8, it's going to have a 120 hertz display. It's going to be a full 13 inches. It's going to have dual Thunderbolt 4 ports, and it's going to support their new Slim Pen 2.
All I've got to say about this is the 120 hertz screen. Okay, you know, I get it. It will make things a little bit smoother, but the game changer here is the Thunderbolt 4 ports for me. It really is.
Well, go ahead, Chris.
I think that's a big thing, and I think he's right. I wouldn't dismiss the 120 hertz screen too much. Because not only will it make things smoother, it'll make that pen a lot more functional.
True.
And those two things together might, you know, Microsoft has made several statements about the Studio laptop and the Surface Pro 8, and they keep using the phrase, you know, creator PC. And for that to work well, you have to have good pen support, if that's what you're going to use it for.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the pen support, Chris, because what have you and I been talking about for years, right, is OneNote, right, which is a mainstay for me from a business perspective. I cannot survive. I cannot do business. I cannot go to work without OneNote and an actual pen that I can go ahead and take digital ink and notes with.
And it's my go-to device, my go-to app as well for note-taking, mostly because of its pretty strong cross-platform support. I do like the new pen that they're using a haptic kind of feedback. I think there's some value to be had in that. That should be interesting to see how that plays out. But I will say, having said that, with OneNote, and again, this is something you and I have discussed
numerous times.
They need to bring it back and make it more consistent among its iterations. That makes it very challenging for people that, I can do this on this version, but I can't do it on this version. Those kinds of things need to be improved.
I can't do it on my Mac. It's the same way with Outlook. I can't do it the same way on Windows as I can on my Mac, or vice versa.
Exactly.
Or on your iPad or on your Android tablet. I mean, the versions are all different.
The functions are similar, but they're actually carried out differently.
Quite frankly, rather than putting an interface on Windows 11, right, a newer interface on there, I'd rather see them go back and address some of these really important mainstay apps. That's where I'd like to see them focus some attention.
Define an important mainstay app.
I think OneNote is a good mainstay app. I say they have put some attention to making Word, Excel, PowerPoint, the big three, as it were, more consistent. I'd like to see things like Visio become multi-platform.
You know, it is right now a Windows only.
Windows only or web only, yeah.
And that is particularly a problem, especially for the company that I'm currently engaged with. They are a Mac shop. And while they are using mostly Google applications, there are some Microsoft-based applications that are still in use, Excel, PowerPoint occasionally, OneNote specifically, but Visio is, I mean, there are some web-based applications that's try to copy that.
There's a Mac-based app that tries to copy it.
But none of them are on par with Vizio or Vizio.
No, Vizio does what it does very well. But I, again, I don't want to get harped on that, but I think it speaks to the larger issue of Microsoft. One of the things they have had difficulty with in Windows and with their Office apps is consistency,
right?
Not just across platforms, but in behavior. I do something and it works this way this time, but the next time I do the same thing, it does something slightly different, and I don't know why. Those kinds of behaviors.
I've seen that as well.
They need more consistency. I think that would help them a lot rather than putting a prettier interface on Windows 11.
But getting us back to the hardware at the Surface event, right? The Surface 8 Pro, you've got the Slim Pen support, which was really kind of what got us off on the OneNote and software tangent. And that's where your 120 hertz display is really going to go ahead and make a difference along with the pen. And I can see that, and I agree. Interestingly enough, the Surface Go 3, which was refreshed with either a Intel Pentium Gold 6500Y or on the quote unquote high end, a Core i3 10100Y processor. It's also got Windows Hello camera support, as well as just Surface Pen support, not Slim Pen, but Surface Pen support, as well as LTE support. So this is their true iPad competitor. And I don't know how well this is really going to be a competitor for the iPad.
How does the Go do now?
It is an okay machine.
Yeah. No, I mean, in terms of sales, how does it do today?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how.
Hey,
well.
Chris.
Yes, sir. Farrah. Yes.
Hey, the Surface Go 3, is that going to be full Windows capable, or is it going to come out of the box with 10S or the new equivalent?
That is a really great question.
And I asked that for a reason, because in my world, being retired, living around a bunch of retired folks who are anything but geeks, this is a big deal. We push Windows 10S. We have for years on the retired community. When you go buy a new computer, get Windows 10S, because then they don't come to us 3 weeks later and they've got malware, they've got this problem, they've been hacked, they got this app that did that thing. And if you get them into a Windows 10S machine, they're happy, because the only thing they do is internet and email anyway. So why not give them a piece of hardware that they can't get in trouble with?
Surface Go 3, all right, will run Windows 11 along with all of the hardware except for the Surface Duo 2 that was
Microsoft's website says 11 home in S mode.
Okay, good. That's what I was hoping.
That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
That's a good thing. You can come out of that mode if you want, but I mean, for your kids or your grandpa or whatever, that's a good thing.
And with the i3, if you go the high end on the Go with the i3, you should be okay. All right.
Yeah.
Getting out of S mode. So it should be a full blown Windows 11 computer. All right. With a decently sized screen running a full HD resolution. So, not too bad.
Not too bad.
And it's got Windows Hello camera support.
If they push this, I think it'll sell. I really do.
Yeah. Probably my biggest beef with both the Surface tablet-like devices is still not including the keyboard in the box, you know, but at least they did one good thing in that they included the pen with the keyboard, at least for the Surface Pro 8.
Agree. That has been the biggest problem with the Surface Pro line, is that the keyboard has always been a $130 separate purchase over and above the anywhere between $800 to $1,500 tablet purchase.
Chris, you didn't whine when you had to buy the Apple keyboard. Neither did I. $250.
That's not entirely true, because I had the Apple keyboard for my iPad Pro, my M1 iPad Pro. I had that particular keyboard in my Amazon saved for later list for well over 2 years before I finally pulled the trigger.
I have to admit that the Apple keyboard is one of the best keyboards, portable keyboards I've ever bought.
Absolutely.
Absolutely love
it. I can't agree with you more.
If I had to ask for one improvement over the Surface keyboard, make it less flexible. It's too flexible, and it bangs and bends when you try to, if you type anything other than the lightest. I wish they would improve that keyboard just a little bit more, more rigidity.
Well, right? there's a huge problem with that particular design because it is not lappable at all. All right, no. It is not a laptop. True. It requires a desk.
But even sitting on a desk, Chris, if you let it snap into place where it's up at a slight angle, you get that flex and that bend, and
it bounces
a little bit crazy.
The keyboard
and
bounces.
Oh, by the way, on the Surface Pro X, the keyboard actually snaps a little bit too high, and it's difficult to access the taskbar with it in that mode. You have to pull it flat. I'm always having to pull it flat in order to use it.
But
the flexibility would be nice if they would make it a little more rigid. I think that would be great.
Yeah, I agree. I will tell you that particular design is problematic, and it's the reason why. I mean, I've had a Surface Pro, I had a Surface Pro 2, I've had a Surface Pro 3. I worked for a company and they got me a Surface Pro 6. And I finally looked at them and I gave them the Surface Pro 6 back and I said, I need a Surface Book. I said, I at 85 words a minute, which is about where I type, I cannot use this. The keyboard is not usable on a slant. All right. It is, you have to have it flat on the table, and it doesn't have any travel when you do that. The keyboard is too flimsy. Though, it bounces too much when you type.
Right.
Which is why I ended up going not only for work at that time, but personally with the Surface Book, because it is a full blown laptop.
Right.
You know, the screen is detachable.
Yep.
That laptop base is a full fledged regular laptop base keyboard.
So having said that, what do you think about the move to the Surface Laptop Studio?
Well, that is a fabulous segue because I was just about to go there first, so thank you for that. But I will give you an update on that as I have one arriving next week.
Nice.
All right.
Cool.
So it is something that I'm curious about it. This is an all-in-one. The screen does not detach, even though it pulls forward. It's very much like the design for the iPad Pro with Apple's Magic Keyboard. It does that kind of thing. The only concern that I have with it at this point, without having put my hands on it or having seen the design or the model at all, is the fact that when the display slides all the way out, there is a gap between the screen and the keyboard base. So the keyboard sort of sits at like a 5 to 10 degree angle. All right.
Kind of like the early Asus things that had that big gap in there.
Yeah. So I'm concerned whether or not this is going to be maybe it's probably closer to 3 to 5 degrees.
And I'm curious if it's able to fold all the way back the other way, though. If you can fold it back the other way, that might get you flat. I don't know if you can or can't.
I don't think that it does that. I think it does three positions and three positions only. Laptop mode, trackpad visible mode.
Right.
All right. Which is that halfway point, and then all the way down to cover the keyboard completely.
Tablet,
all
right.
And this is what
it isn't really like the Apple iPad in their keyboard, in the sense that when the Apple iPad keyboard floats forward, you still have access to the keyboard.
You do still have access to the keyboard, and I don't think it lays all the way flat either.
Gotcha.
But the Surface Laptop Studio does. Now they say it's a swiveling 14-inch. 120 hertz display. Not sure where they get the swivel, but okie-dokie.
We'll see. Sounds interesting, though. Yes. At least it's something different and unique and interesting. I mean, we'll see where it goes.
Yes.
I know similar things have been tried before, but never quite like this with this combo. So I'm anxious to see where they go.
I am anxious myself. It's got an 11th generation H35 core. either i5 or i7 processor. It comes with RTX.
What's the price point?
It starts, I believe, at $1,599 on the consumer side or $1,699 on the enterprise side. The difference there being on the enterprise side, the graphics card is a little bit better.
Right.
All right. It's got Thunderbolt 4 ports. It's got slim Pen 2 support. And it will come with up to 32 gigabytes of RAM, a 2 terabyte hard drive. But
well, if one of these new ones coming out, I have to buy something. I got to buy something because it's apparent that Microsoft is never going to let me have Windows on any of my M1 devices. Period. Right.
Well, yeah. Disappointing at best. Microsoft basically said that they will not, they are not going to support in any way, shape, or form Windows on ARM on an M1 Mac.
Right.
To me, it's just not the same as Parallels. I can't do Parallels. I mean, it's good, it's okay, but it's not the same.
There's two other things to keep in mind. Again, if they don't prevent it from being installed, it may well be that Parallels does a fairly good job supporting it. But, you know, we may turn around a year from now and Apple may turn out to make a boot camp for the Windows ARM version to run on an M1. I mean, you know, we don't really know what we're looking at.
But I'm not so sure what their incentive to do that would be, but it might happen.
You know, based on what I'm seeing today and what I'm hearing today, right, I would agree that while anything can happen,
right,
I truly do not see this happening. Microsoft wants you on native Windows hardware.
Yeah.
And they want you to run Windows 11 on a true Windows machine. And
so that having been said, you know, and the Server Studio, Laptop Studio being out now, coming out, what I don't understand is why the inclusion of that device required the removal of the Surface Book from the lineup.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was wondering. I can tell you from this, the Surface Laptop Studio is in my short list right now, along with the M1 Max, of which one is going to be my next machine. I'd like the Surface Pro format, but I don't like the cost of external graphics cards, which is really something I really kind of want. So it's like, I'm just like, well, just get the Studio. It's going to be cheaper than a Pro 8 and external graphics card setup. So, I mean,
true. I mean, you're going to be able to go ahead and run some sort of a external card through one of those Thunderbolt 4 ports for sure. If you want to do that, it's also got what I would consider to be gamer level graphics with the RTX line of graphics chip in it. And with that 120 hertz display, you should see smooth video, smooth pen support as well. So I think it's going to be a decent platform for gaming as well as for creativity. We'll see.
Speaking of price points, what's the Surface Go 3 start at?
The Surface Go 3 starts at, I believe, $349.
Yep.
Yep. All right. It is for a
$399.
Thank you. $399.
It's almost a disposable computer. If you don't like it, throw it anything away.
Effectively, yes. But you do have to understand and realize that it is only going to run a Pentium Gold or a Core i3 level processor.
Yeah, and keep in mind that i3 is sort of, again, it's, if I remember correctly, it's more akin to what we used to call the M3.
Yes.
Right.
M3, right, Chris. You're right.
Right. Yeah. So this is your lower end. It is a lower end tablet, but if all you're looking for is basic YouTube support, basic Windows support, something to surf the web with, something to watch a quick video with here and there.
If they want it to be an iPad competitor, which is kind of where they've been targeting it.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the kind of thing you would pay $400 or even a little more than that.
Yeah,
you know, throwing it into my backpack, I wouldn't worry about it getting banged around too much. And, you know, it's not at that price point where I'm
it wouldn't suit any of us for a daily driver.
But no, absolutely not.
A lot of people it might work well for.
Exactly. No,
but for you know, for us, for that, hey, I've got to go and I've got to do this quick thing and I don't want to take apart the big rig or grab the big heavy powerful laptop, but I want something for $399.
Especially if what you do, especially if what you do is a kind of a VPN and Microsoft remote desktop or Citrix-y kind of thing. Those could be served very well for a quick kind of take care of a couple of things at the office kind of thing. Absolutely. While you're on the road. So yeah, I can certainly see there's a place for this to be.
And it will come with LTE support as well. There are models that will support LTE. So, so your Verizon, your new T-Mobile networks, your AT&T network, it's very doable.
I have it in my Surface Pro X, and I never thought at first I would use it very much, and I actually do. When I have found myself using the LTE in it, yeah.
Yeah, I had a tablet that I got as a freebie from Verizon one time. One of their branded tablets that had it in it. And on a tablet like that, I didn't, especially since I kind of been remote for six to seven years, well before COVID, it's just not something I use. Now, I will say this is when I was working downtown, I was riding a bus to work. I used it a lot then. Almost every day on the bus, I would use the 4G connection on there. But, of course, then you could look at the Surface Duo 2 as well.
And that's very true.
I will tell you that there have been times when having LTE level support on a Chicago commuter train has been a huge help. Wouldn't necessarily pull it on the red or the blue line, but any of the metro lines, I would feel comfortable enough in pulling it out and doing some work. Having LTE support is not a bad thing. Having it on the Go 3 is probably a very, very good idea. So that's effectively the Microsoft event. It was lasted all of what, about 20 to 25 minutes?
We haven't talked about the Duo 2, Chris. We haven't talked about that yet.
Well, I let me get to it.
You just said that.
I said effectively, right. Let me get to it. I wanted to sum up here and say, for all of the new Windows 11 based hardware that they released, the Surface Pro 8, the Surface Go 3 refresh, and the Surface Laptop Studio, which we will go into more detail next time after I have it in house and can cry over it. The Surface Duo 2 is really the upgrade to their existing Surface Duo line, which came out as an Android 10 device. It's supposed to be a Android 11 device eventually. Surface Duo 2, I believe, Chris, is going to come out with which operating system again?
Surface Duo?
Surface Duo 2.
It's supposed to come out with Android 11 on it.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Or 12 launches when? Probably next month?
Something like that. Sure. I would say eventually it will get 12, I would think. But with the Duo 1 being released last year and the Duo 2 being released this year, all right, again, 5.8-inch screen, dual screens, curved display on the hinge so that when the thing is closed and you've got notifications come in, it will light up, it will flash at you, and you will be able to see some information related to the notification on that curved display on the inside of the hinge. Unfortunately, and I think this is the biggest detractor for the whole thing, the camera bump. It's got this ultra wide telephoto lens sort of elongated black thing on the back. It comes in two colors, the newest color being a graphite matte finish. The glacier white is still the standard color, although they're leaning heavily with two to the matte black. There's still some big ugly bump on the
back. Some of the quick things I've read still say it actually still folds back okay. I don't know what that really means, though.
It means that there's a gap between the two.
Well, there's a gap even now without the camera bump. There's a slight gap when you fold it back like that. Well, there may especially
be a slight bump now.
Right.
But there's it's a huge gap. You know.
But I wonder what happens with this one once you put the bumpers on. Is it really that bad?
Yeah, that's a good point. But
I don't know.
I don't know either. I haven't seen one in hand yet. I'm anxious to see one in person and see what they...
Yep.
I mean, that's probably one of the first things I'll do is flip it backwards and see what it does.
Well, you know, from a plus side, it does have a Snapdragon 888 with 5G support. All right. But unfortunately, again, as a huge detractor, it's got that hefty $1,500 price tag again.
Yep. Well, no actual carriers are selling it directly. You have to buy it outright. There are some people like myself that still buys it via my carrier, by my phone via the carrier. So it's like, at least
they're the ones still doing that. Oh,
I'm one of the ones.
Joel's that guy. Yes.
Yeah. Joel's that guy.
Well, and then they are talking about the Samsung Galaxy S22
right.
Ultra is essentially going to be the Note replacement, which now I'm more excited about that phone, but that's what it's looking like.
I will say this much. The price point on the Microsoft on the Duo hasn't gone up. And at least you're getting, I think, more value for the money than you did with the Duo One at its original price.
Yeah, I agree. I think the curved screen on the hinge is a fantastic idea, especially if people are using it not just as like a LTE tablet to carry with them, but as their phone too.
It will.
Yeah, but when you look at this thing dollar for dollar, I want to hear what Chris has to say in a couple of weeks comparing the $1,500 Duo 2 to the $1,500 average or starting laptop studio.
Well,
more for your money, I think.
I will tell you, at least right now, when I bought my Duo, when I got it, it was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of around 60% off the original $1,500 price tag. All right.
It won't be that for the new one though.
No, not even close. They start at $1,499 and they go as high as I believe $1,799. And I have a very difficult time paying near two, because it'll, after tax, title, license, and out the door, that is well over, or just over, I'm sorry, $2,000 for that phone.
Yep.
All right. And that's not subsidized. That's out of your pocket or on your credit card. And I have a very difficult time with paying that much for a phone. All right.
Or do when, I too.
When it is really going to be and can really be nothing more than a companion device. This is not something that you're going to do, even though you could conceivably, you know, do all your word processing and spreadsheeting on it. You're not going to. You're just simply not going to. All right, the screens are big, but they're not that big.
I will say one thing. I will say is I think if I had to choose between this or a flexible screen, this every day.
Oh, between a foldable screen, there's no contest. There's absolutely no contest.
Yep.
A folding screen, you guys, you know, we don't do the video, but you guys saw it last week. You know, I showed you the Flip 3 5G. All right. And it comes, I told you, it comes with that crease in the screen pre-installed. All right. And it's true. All right. You look at it in the right angle with the right, you know, with the right lighting, you clearly see a crease in the screen. Same with the Fold.
The Fold 3 gets right up in the same price point, right? I mean, it gets pretty close to the same price point when you're talking about it. And it, you don't know about the durability on that. I do have to say this much. I will think that the Duo strikes me as it's going to be around in 3 years, right? I mean, in terms of the hardware. It will hold up. It's durable. The glass is very durable.
Absolutely.
The Duo 1 feels very solid. Other than the tiny bit of cracking that they got around the power thing because it's too thin there,
right.
Which I understand they've corrected on the Duo 2 or made it a little bit thicker, so you don't have that problem.
Agree.
But having said that, I mean, it's a very solid device, and I would agree with you. I'd prefer to have the Duo as opposed to one of these foldable screens today. Again, I don't know where we're going to be in a year or two or three, but
right
today,
yeah, today, multi-screen devices, I agree, are the way to go. If you're looking for some level of hinge or fold, a multi-screen device is better. Your foldable screen, you know, something that's going to crease in the middle of the display. It's absolutely awesome that Samsung has got technology that will allow for a foldable LCD or whatever it is, whatever kind of technology, display technology they're using. But to be very, very honest, that thing's going to crack. It's going to crack.
So I have a question for you guys, and maybe you know, maybe you don't. So the Duo 2 and all these other new products are on Microsoft's website for pre-order for the most part. They still list the original Duo on their website for $699, beginning at $699.
And they probably will until
the Are they planning on just running stock out? Or are they planning, that was my question. Are they going to run until stock goes out? Or were they planning on doing what Apple does, which is keep a lower tier available for folks?
That's a great question. Larry, what do you think?
You know what? I don't know. The thing about Apple is that, you know, they're known to keep certain things for a while, and they make legacy some of the things that I wonder why they did that. I mean, why didn't you leave this one legacy? I mean, the iPhone 12 Pro is a perfect example, one of the best phones ever made, and it instantly it's gone. It's just gone.
Yeah.
And they still have the 11 and the 10 and all those that you can still buy. Well, I don't
the
get
10, this, the 10R is done.
Yeah, 10R is now done. Yeah, you're right.
It probably and so has is, to and do so is the iPhone.
So is the iPhone 12 series. It's done.
Oh, that's what I was just talking about.
That's what he's saying. Yeah.
Why did they do that?
I think it's more about the cost of manufacture than anything else. What are they paying? I would think it's more about what they're paying for the parts. I mean, for them to call something a legacy, they're going to offer it at a lower price and all that kind of thing. The 12, I don't think, if they were to continue manufacturing the 12, I don't think they could lower the price enough and still
keep it. They couldn't sell the 13 because there's not a lot of difference between
them. There's not enough difference, I think, is exactly right. Whereas with the 11 or the 10, there's significant difference, and the manufacture process is different, probably runs on a different set of lines or process or whatever. And so I think that those components are, you know, lower in cost now, all that kind of thing. I think it has a lot to do with it.
Probably so, right. Yeah.
I think that's why we still see, an Apple Watch Series 3? Is that what
it's,
we
were still seeing?
Yeah. Oh my God. You know, still solid.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see the Series 5.
You see
the Series 3. It's like,
or, you know, you don't see the 4, the 5. Or the 6. I mean, it's the 7 or the 3, right?
Well, it's going to be once the 7's out. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Surface hardware, Microsoft Surface event, kind of an interesting kind of thing, right? Yeah, two things that I do want to go ahead and cover before we get to our pick of the week segment here at the end. There are a couple of Apple related items that I know that we wanted to go ahead and touch on. Larry, you've got an iPhone 13, correct?
I do. Right. Yeah. So does my wife. Yeah.
All right. So, and I know Chris, you've also got a number of iOS based devices, and they're probably running either 15 or 15.01 as Apple came out with
the latter
an Apple update. Have either of you guys bumped into any kind of touchscreen related issues where you just
tap, tap, tap,
and
nor have I. I was expecting it. I read about it. I said, oh God, if it gets anybody, it'll get me. But it didn't.
It hit me. I've got it.
And you're on a 13 or on a 12?
I am on a 12 Pro Max.
So my mom is on a 12 Pro, not the Max. And I told her to hold off on going to the 15 just yet because I didn't know. I didn't know if it would hit her. Now that 15.01 is out, I thought about telling her to go ahead.
I still have it on 15.
Hey, Chris, I just read something today that might interest you and your thing with your mom there. Initially, this was reported as a bug that probably solely affected the new 13 line. However, now it's pretty much thought that it's more along the iOS 15 is the problem, more so than the hardware. That's what they're saying.
Well, I'll tell you what, I haven't had her switch yet, and I'm probably going to, I guess I'll have her hold off a little while longer.
I bet she'll be fine if she does it. I really do. Yeah.
Let me just say this. It is very frustrating. It is near the edges or the corners of the device.
Chris, have you rebooted? Because that's what they say is fixing it for like 30 or 40% of the people.
I have reset. I have powered off.
Oh, okay.
It is there, sir.
It's present in the 15.1 beta too. So, it's going to take at least beta 2 for it to get fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping, I'm not running any iOS.
And they
beta on my.
They have corrected the watch unlock issue, right?
Oh, I believe the No. Newsflash. I got a 13. My wife's got a 13. I have an Apple Watch 4. I didn't have that problem. My wife has the Apple Watch SE that she got last year. She had that problem when she first put 15 on. Now, they said it was going to be fixed in iOS 15.01, so I couldn't wait to download it on her phone and reset everything, rebooted everything, repaired. I did everything. I went back to 0.1 on everything. Still got it. She has 15.01, and she cannot unlock her phone with her watch.
Period. That's very interesting.
And that I'm reading now that she's not the only one. It's starting to come out.
Okay.
That they may have fixed it for many. If you remember, Chris, the initial Bluetooth problem with the M1 MacBook that came out.
The first one.
Yes.
I had that on both of mine.
I did,
yes,
too.
You did, and you and I had many a conversation.
It took them forever to fix that. God. Yep.
And I thought you were going to set your hair on fire there for a while.
That wouldn't have taken much.
Driving your bats. So
that would have been a small match.
So hopefully,
anyway, hopefully it'll be fixed.
Hopefully it'll be fixed and fixed in 15.1 when it RTMs and shoots out to everybody.
I think by that time it will.
Yep. From what I understand, there's another Apple event that's supposed to happen sometime.
Yeah,
in
October.
Yeah. Right, sometime in October. The expected get there is an updated MacBook Pro and M1X, if you will. The retiring of the 13-inch Pro and the introduction of the 14-inch MacBook Pro, as well as the upgrade and Apple siliconization, if you will, of the 16-inch. That's what's expected.
And I understand the rumors are new AirPods too, possibly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yep, as well as an actual release date for Monterey. So, which may actually see, if everything is correct, a high power mode.
I
don't know. I think that's just one of those don't kick the battery down kind of things. But what I really am anxious to see, to tell you the truth, is the universal control. I'd like to see that. I've used Sidecar. I like Sidecar, but I'd like it to be more seamless. And this universal control is kind of where I want it to be. And I'm hoping they get it out there. I understand it's not in any of the betas.
And again, for those that may not necessarily remember what that universal control is, that's really the, hey, let's put my iPad right next to my Monterey running Mac and my iOS 15 or iPad OS 15 running iPad. And I'm able to use that as instantly as an external display without really doing too much more.
It's not exactly that. It's actually more along the lines of, it will recognize and use your keyboard and mouse on the iPad, even though it's paired to your Mac.
Yep.
Right. But you can basically take over your iPad with your Mac.
But I can do that today with Sidecar.
With Sidecar, yes, right, but
yeah, but when we watched this feature in the keynote, it was a lot cooler than Sidecar.
Exactly, you know, a lot cooler than Sidecar.
Way cool. This was you know, let's go ahead and instantly, without having to do much other than just put the iPad next to the Mac, and I can go ahead and instantly offload applications that are running on my Mac to my iPad.
Hey, back to the high power mode just for a second, since that's where you started. Yep. You know, I mean, in all honesty, there's no real details on exactly how this is going to work. I think all we can assume is going to force the CPU and the GPU to absolutely just max out, work at their high performance
yeah.
level.
Yeah, this is overclocking for your RAM and for your processor. Yes,
even if it's on battery, it doesn't matter. Still going to do it. So this is going to turn the fans on every M1 MacBook out there.
Those that have them, yes.
Except the Air, right. Yeah.
Except the Air.
Right. Except the Air, which doesn't have them.
Doesn't have anything to do.
Well, the other thing is, though, Chris, Apple's going to be able to designate which models it goes on. So it won't put it on the Air. It just,
good point.
It won't be there.
My guess is that they probably won't, since it doesn't have fans in the cooling system on.
I don't think it's ready for prime time yet. I don't think we'll see it right away, personally.
I would agree.
I would tend to agree with you as well. If it does come out as part of Monterey, I think you're going to see it with a limited feature set. I think it'll probably go ahead and get some polish on it for the next version of macOS, which is macOS... to be named later. So
yeah, we all know how conservative Cupertino is. So
yep. And what a pretty cool name that may actually be. macOS Cupertino. That would be
I meant for the
yes, I know what you meant, Larry, but I'm sitting there thinking, you know, hey, what a cool name that would actually be.
I want to see macOS El Segundo. Or still North Ridge, or anywhere, you know, anywhere that's not a mountain, I guess.
That's awesome. Right. That's awesome. All right, kids, we're going to go ahead here and take a quick pause just for a moment here, just to go ahead and get it in our heads, at least what our picks of the week might be.
Ooh hoo.
Yeah, I found
exactly
one.
Exactly. All right, so you know, I want to go ahead and kick off this pick of the week segment. I think I went last week or last time, and I want to go ahead and I want to talk about my pick, which is the Fossil Gen 6 smartwatch. All right, now this is a brand new, never before released. This is Fossil's latest generation smartwatch. It is an Wear OS based smartwatch, but I will tell you, man, this thing is slick. This is, if for $319, this is a really nice smartwatch. It's got a huge, big, bright display. It was easy to set up. It has got a Snapdragon 4100 Plus processor. It's got 1 gigabyte of RAM. It's got, I think, 32 gigabytes of storage. All right. The battery life, they say, is 24 hours. They lie like a rug. Okay. This thing is absolutely, it is really nice, and it does a lot. And if you, your battery life, of course, is completely, as with any mobile device or portable device, is going to be completely dependent upon whatever it is that you go ahead and you do with this thing. But man, I'm telling you, at 310 milliamps, this battery is way too small for what this watch does and what it can do. It does have a pulse ox sensor. It does have a cardio sensor and a heart monitoring sensor. It will go ahead and do an always on display.
Is it ungodly big like a Samsung? Well, it is
what I would consider to be Rolex sized. All right, your Rolex Oyster sized watch.
Right.
All right,
but not like the Samsung.
But no, it's a little bit smaller than the Samsung. I have a Galaxy Watch 3 and a Galaxy Watch. It is a little bit smaller than either of those, but it is still on the larger side. To be very, very honest, the biggest problem that this thing has is battery life and Bluetooth. All right. Great smartwatch. Love it to death. I'm enjoying the daylights out of it. Some of the native watch faces that come with this thing are really informative, and they are really very, very nice. But to be honest, I mean, I have a hard time getting through. You cannot have an always on display. You can't, even though it does support always on, and there is a way of the display dimming to a lower power, sort of either full green or full black and white or gray and white sort of display when you're not actively looking at the watch face. Man, this thing, it just sucks the battery dry. And I have to stop during the middle of the day and go ahead and throw it on a charger. But man, other than that, at $319, it's got the health sensors. It supports the health stuff. It does the exercise related stuff. Even though it is a Wear OS watch from an iOS perspective, it doesn't it tries to go ahead and integrate with Apple Health, especially where the pulse ox and the cardio related or the heart rate monitoring related functionality is. It does seem to have a bit of a problem synchronizing with that, although it tries. But if you're looking for an Android Wear watch, something that's not necessarily an Apple Watch, something that's a little bit more affordable and still provides some of the high-end sleep tracking or exercise related or health-based sensors, this is a great choice. The screen is big, bright, easy to read, even for folks with eyesight problems like me. This is an absolutely awesome watch and will be appearing in a roundup of smartwatches that I'm doing for 2021 on itechgear.org. So watch the site for the article.
Cool.
Yep. Speaking of which, Larry, what do you got?
Well, I tell you what, I appreciate that you guys are taking care of addressing all the touchy-feely technology toys like watches and wooden laptop covers, which I would have never thought of, but they're cool and people need to know about them. But having worked for so many years with Microsoft Shareware Pick of the Week, I mean, we're talking 600 or 700 weeks worth of picks. Yep. You're probably never going to get anything out of me other than what I think is a good piece of software. So I'm gonna start this one off with an app called Crouton, just like the crouton you put in your salad. It's an Apple-only thing. I've always been an avid cook, and as a matter of fact, I absolutely love trying recipes, creating new ones. I do a lot of home cooking. I follow way too many cooking blogs, and this is probably the second most fun thing I do right after all my technology toys and habits. The problem has been that for way too long, recipe manager apps they've never really been all that popular. So one or two of them have always dominated, like Paprika and a couple of others, but they're not really all that great. But recently, there's a young indie developer in New Zealand who decided to take a fresh approach on a recipe manager app, go totally out of the box, make one that he thought everybody would like. So I took a look at this thing. It was on the App Store. He did it as a universal app, great programmer. He built it in Swift. So he's got a copy for iPad, iPhone, everything, Mac OS, it's all universal.
Right. So this is way more than a recipe organizer, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hang on just a second. It was like nearly perfect. Well, I'll say nearly perfect, but, you know, it needed a few things. So I emailed the kid and I said, look, here's my compliments. I said, you've really done a great job. And if you stick with your program, I can see this thing taking over number one genre spot in the App Store. I really can. And I said, here's the few things that I think you might want to work on over the next year or so. So he worked on them for about a week and incorporated all of them. He said, well, how about this? I said, wow.
Wow.
What a concept, a developer who listens to users. You know, this thing is amazing. It does everything that you might expect a recipe app would do. You know, it'll automatically download recipes and all that crap. But what it's done, do any of you guys know what the Blink technology is with Apple, where you can use your eyelids and it's with assistive stuff?
Yes, I have.
Okay, he has incorporated Blink technology. So you set it up on your iPhone or iPad where you're doing your cooking, and each step of the recipe is in large print, all on the screen, and you blink right, looking at it anywhere within 3 feet. It will sense that. It'll turn the page, go to the next step. Oh, you want to go back? Blink your left eye. It'll go back one, and it works.
This is when you've got your hands full of raw meat and breadcrumbs and egg whites or egg yolks.
You can't turn the pages or whatever. It is so cool.
This is actually pretty cool.
It is, and it's just, if you look at it, of course you look at the trial, but Chris, I know you cook a lot too.
I do.
And this thing is a mere, I don't know, $4.99, $6.99. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you. So Larry, what's the damage on this little bad boy?
Yeah, it's either $4.99 or $6.99. And I apologize, I forgot to look. Maybe somebody can go fact check me here, but it's, I want to say, $6.99, but maybe $4.99. It's yours forever. You don't have no subscription, no BS, just, you know, no big amount of cash. It's got more customization in it than any app should be allowed to have. I mean, it's just amazing.
So it is also on the Mac App Store. It is free to download.
Right.
All right. And it is all it's funded via in-app purchases. All right.
Right, but if you look at that, it'll be I want to say $4.99, or I just don't know. I'm sorry, I blew
it.
I'm pulling
it down right now.
Grab it, because I want to say it's only $4.99, but it might be $6.99. Either way, it is so worth it. I would have paid $29.95 for this thing in a heartbeat. And it syncs what uses iCloud to sync across all your devices. You can share anything with anybody else, like your family or whoever. You can share recipes with them and your meal plans. It's got shopping lists built in. You can auto-generate meal plans. You can scale the recipes. It uses the new tech scan of your iOS 15 for, you can take a picture, and I tried this, a handwritten recipe, poorly handwritten, with a picture stapled on it. And it took a picture of that, scanned the text, got the picture, and put it in there in less than about a minute.
See, that's unbelievable. That in and of itself is awesome. Now, Crouton Plus is $6.99.
$6.99.
With it, you get unlimited recipes, all right, and iCloud household sharing. It lets you remove
you can
the recipe
give it to your
limit
family
and
too.
Sync your recipes and meal plan with a household.
It's awesome. I'm serious. It really is. I don't get all excited about too much, but take a look at it at crouton.app, crouton.app. And Kit's got a nice little website there. You can, he's quite a programmer. I'm telling you, I get Swift, and this kid is really, really
awesome.
Good with it.
That's awesome. More power to this guy. This is wonderful.
I agree. There needs to be more app developers like this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you. Crouton.app. It is on my short list. Joel, how about you and your pick of the week?
All right. Well, mine's not going to be one of those ones for everyone, but like many big dudes, let me be clear, you don't have to be a large person to need a BiPAP or a CPAP. BiPAP is basically the same thing as a CPAP, but bi-directional. Okay. So I have to wear that every night. All right, so if you don't have something like what my pick of the week is, then you're supposed to, I say supposed to, I don't know anybody who actually does, but you're supposed to actually take it all apart, wash it out with a, they usually recommend using a baby shampoo because it doesn't, it's hypoallergenic and doesn't have any kind of weird odors and stuff in it. And then wash it out and hang it up to dry before your next night. But nobody does that because it's a pain in the butt. So I was at a Walgreens and I got extremely lucky here because Walgreens is starting to clear out this machine. And it was, it's a normally a $250 machine and I got it for $25 and it's
out the front door.
Yes. And it, and basically what it is, I have the SoClean 2. It's a cleaning slash sanitizing system for your, not only your mask and your hose, but also like your water reservoir as well. In fact, it's actually all glowing green because it's all through my clean cycle. Granted, probably kind of the nice thing about it is it does have a timer on it. So you just plop it in there and then, as long as you don't lose power between now and when you go to bed, it'll clean it. And you have to actually have it run at least 2 hours before you go to bed. All right. So that it has enough time to get through the cycle, but it basically uses, I believe it's ozone. I think no activated oxygen, they call it. It does have a filter that you have to replace every couple months. And the filters are, you get two for $30, you know, so
nice.
It's one of those things where I've been wanting to buy it, but I just wasn't sure about it until I saw it at this ridiculously low price. And I said, oh yeah. And I jumped at it and I highly recommend it. I sleep better. I don't have a lot of, I mean, I still get a little bit of the morning ecopucks in the morning, you know, but sure. It's a little bit less than that. And I'm going to intend to use this every night. Well, every night I am home, I'll say that, because it's not a convenient device to take with you when you're traveling.
Sure.
So if you can't use it when you travel, and no big deal, you know. The only thing that you have to do is swap out the filters. You might want to get some like antiseptic wipes. They actually sell some wipes and some cleaner on their website. It's they say that you should use with primarily with the mask and the hose, but you know.
You know, I gotta agree with you, Joel. Yep. That I have one as well, and Joel, you're so correct. This is, it's one of the, some of the best $250 I ever spent. And the reason you, the reason you got it for $25, the reason you got it is because now if you go to Walgreens, you'll see the SoClean 3, which is no better, not a bit better. It's just packaged a little differently, but like anybody else in technology, they run out of customers. So the only way they generate more revenue is come out with version 3, version 4. You're going to go down and buy it just like you go buy a new iPhone every year. And we all do it. And now this thing's back up to like $299 or something like that.
Yeah. Well, actually, there is one minor difference between the SoClean 2
and SoClean 3.
SoClean 3 has a USB port on the back of it, so you can plug your phone into it. But I doubt it's not going to rapid charge as fast as.
Look, it's off white this year instead of white, you know.
Well, actually, I kind of question the redesign. Because the new one is wider at the top than at the bottom, and I think doesn't that make it a little bit more less
hard
stable?
To put the mask in, right?
Yeah,
it's less inclusive that way. It's less inclusive.
There you go. But you know, if you happen to do that, and it's one of those things too, where if you snore or your wife your side is sore because your wife's poking you in the side because you're snoring, go get checked out. Get used to it. I think I'm still not. I've been on it for over 10 years now, and there's still some nights where I'm just like, "This is it."
I was gonna say I questioned that part. I don't think I've ever gotten used to it, and I've kind of given up on it once in a while. while, but
it's one of those things. Work with your doctor. Like, probably the biggest thing on BiPAPs and CPAPs is finding the right mask for you.
That's the hardest thing right there.
It really is. It really is, because you, a lot of them will start you off on the nasals. And then, well, of course I'm a mouth breather. Yeah. Open my mouth at night. So I basically, when you do that, when you only have the nose cushions, you waste the therapy. Then they give you a neck strap and they're like, oh, that's painful actually for what was for me. So
when you go in for that stupid sleep study, they never have any of the good cool masks there, like the ResMed F30 and all of those. So like you said, if you get a good mask later on, you'll enjoy it.
Yep. And I can't imagine sleeping without it, but now I can also make sure it's clean, which is something I don't know a single person who ever cleans it every day they're supposed
not
to.
Not one.
Yep.
I know that William Shatner is much happier with his CPAP.
Oh, he is.
Yes.
Now that he's got his so clean. So not to make too light of it, Joel, because it is a very serious issue. And having a tool like this to help you keep that clean so that you don't get any bacterial related sort of infections or problems is very, very important. So I really appreciate you bringing this particular pick.
What a cool pick. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you for that particular pick.
Yes, sir.
And keeping on the lines of inclusivity and whatnot, Chris, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your very interesting and very important pick of the week?
Yeah, you know, I often won't. The idea of having a pick of the week is kind of anti-me, but
it's not really in my nature, but every now and then
you hit something that you have to go, you know what, I want to bring that up, you know, that kind of thing. And this was one of those things. One of the lesser events or what lesser announcements at the Microsoft event was a thing that they refer to as the Microsoft Surface Adaptive Kit.
Yes.
I don't know what the cost is on it yet. I don't think it's actually officially out yet. But the idea is these are a set of, we'll call them stickers and other components to help people who have disabilities use their Surface equipment better, their Surface Pro, their Surface Lapbook. So there are things like they've got like a sticker that has shapes on the bumps that are textured. So you can mark the ports, for example, and then you put a longer version of the same sticker on the cable.
Right.
So now you know which two go together. And so it helps that, you know, that would help people who are visually impaired. Things for the keys to mark certain keys. So it's easier to, you know, finding your home keys, it would be something that would be very challenging if you're visually impaired. So these are things that help with those kinds of things. And I got to thinking, you know, Microsoft, good on you for offering this. And how come more manufacturers don't do something like this? You know,
it's interesting you bring that up, Chris, because I have a friend, amateur radio friend of mine, who used to live in Columbus area, now lives up near Akron. But I've known him since he was 15, and he does like a remote. I think he does remote support for Spectrum, for internet provider. But his laptop, I'm not sure if Spectrum had to buy him a laptop, but he chose a Surface laptop. And one of the things I always see him post on Facebook is, does anybody know how to do this, you know, or how to find this, or and things like trying to find which side does the power is the PowerPoint on, you know, like after he tears it down,
he
forgets or something like that, you know, and something like this is, I can really see being useful.
Yeah. I got to thinking, this is such an obvious thing. Why hasn't this been going on all along? Or maybe it has, and maybe there's been third parties that offered these kinds of things, but for the vendor themselves to put this out, I think it's not only that they have to make it available, but they have to kind of market that they've done this, right?
Right.
And Microsoft did that by announcing it as part of this larger event. And I think that's, you know, again, good on them. And to me, I just wanted to bring this up because I think this is actually a really nice thing. And I suspect you could use it on devices other than the Surface. I mean, it's pretty generic that way, but I'd love to see more vendors get on this bandwagon. I think this is a really, really easy way to provide a lot of value to some folks.
Or, I agree. Well, I guess kind of one nice thing about it being stickers is if you're not vision impaired to the point where you need something like that, then you don't have to, you know, you don't have to buy those, and your laptop doesn't have to have the stickers on it.
Exactly.
But my thought is why don't they just integrate it into the plug and into the design of the device, period. But
you know, I think to integrate it into the design of the device would cost a lot more money, and that's probably a driver more than anything else. Plus it's more difficult in the sense that, let's say next year we're using the basically the same chassis, but a slightly different, port layout, you know, where we changed our USB-A to a USB-C or something, you know, like that. That's a much more expensive change if you've built it into the case of the, I think this is a lot more flexible in some ways. It gives them a lot more ways to go. Plus, like I said, you could use it on something other than their device. You could use it on other devices.
Agree.
I don't know. Again, I don't know if they're giving it away. I don't know if there's a nominal fee for it. I haven't seen any place where I've seen a price associated with it.
I have also not seen a price for this, but as a person who has been disabled, both physically as well as from a health perspective with diabetes, I know that it is something that is near and dear to my heart. So Microsoft actually making this particular inroad as far as trying to make Windows as a platform more inclusive for everyone else is extremely important.
Well, so, and I will say this, much as I haven't personally been in a situation where I needed this particular service, but in my thoughts, as I'm considering vendors I want to buy things from,
yes,
this agreed. This is a big PR right. plus as far as I'm concerned.
Right, absolutely. It makes you want to support them.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I know that the client that I am currently consulting with and engaged with on a daily basis is very big on inclusivity. And ensuring that individuals with either physical or some level of other challenge in their lives are included and able to use their services. Having this available for something that is so fundamental to a number of us in terms of being able to use on a regular basis a computer, all right? Whether it is a Microsoft Surface branded computer or whether it is another Windows 11 or even Apple based computer, I can see this being a huge benefit to anybody using any kind of computer, regardless of platform.
Well, it'll work on your new Surface Laptop Studio.
Absolutely, it will. Absolutely, it will. And we're looking forward to seeing that come through. Again, hopefully it's supposed to arrive on the 5th. So on Tuesday, the day that Windows 11 is supposed to be released to the public, and we'll see how that goes. But again, I want to thank everybody for their awesome picks. And I want to thank you, the listener, for giving us a little bit of your time out of your busy day. Again, my name is Christopher Spera. This, along with Joel McLaughlin, Larry McJunkin, and Christopher Gavula, this has been the iTech Gear Weekly, Everything Microsoft, episode number 2. And I want to thank you all for listening and hope to see you again next time.
And hopefully that comes out because we could not hear you.